Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever and whenever you happen to be listening to us in this great world connected by the internet and the World Wide Web. It is The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast, John Morgo, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. Here for our 51st edition, we're going to be talking a lot of stuff. We're going to be talking a lot of football, some baseball, quite potentially a lost weekend for Atlanta, but really not if you know where to look. But right now, we're going to start it off with basketball, college basketball specifically. Practices are just getting underway. Those exhibition games are going to come at us in a little over 2 weeks, and we are pleased to be joined by the Georgia State women's basketball head coach, Gene Hill, talking to us as his practice with his Panthers just getting underway, his second season as head man of Georgia State. Coach Hill, thank you so much for joining us here tonight.
Always a pleasure to join you three guys. Appreciate all you're doing for sports and definitely for women's basketball in general.
Oh, thank you, Coach. It's stories like yours that make it worthwhile. Let's start going inside with your team. I know for a fact that you got a big gift coming into this offseason when Allison Johnson, the Sun Belt newcomer of the year, decided to come back for her last season.
Yeah, no question about it. You know, anytime you get a player like that who decides that, you know, what you're doing, what you're building is something that that they want to stay around and be a part of, is definitely a treat and what you're doing and everything and what you're trying to build and stuff. So we was definitely excited that she wanted to stay and be a part of it and help help build this foundation even farther. I mean, she actually played a big part in what we was able to do last year, but now we're taking that next step, and to be able to do it with her definitely helped.
Like I said, she was the Sun Belt Newcomer of the Year and really kind of came on strong in the latter half of the season, wound up being your leading scorer with 13 points a ball game. Could you just see her maturation come on the court during that time frame?
Well, yeah, you know, Allison was typically used to playing in a system where she was a true post player, the second post, what a lot of people call the power forward. And in our style of play, in our system, we run four perimeter players on the wing. And she was able to make that transition to face up more versus playing with a back to the basket. And so I think it was just a natural process of getting comfortable with that switch. And as she got more comfortable with it and what we expected and how we could utilize her, you can tell it in her play and in her numbers and in her confidence. So obviously we're expecting big things out of her this year.
Let me correct myself. 13.1 points per game led the team in Sun Belt Conference scoring. I wanted to make that clarification on that. Sorry about that. And Allison and Jada Lewis will kind of come together and form a nice core. Jada started out strong, but she really kind of tapered off her performances toward the end of the season. Was that just more along the lines of teams were keying on her?
Yeah, I think, you know, anytime you have a resume like Jada, who was freshman of the year, and then she came back her second year and really had a great non-conference season. And so, you know, when you're that focused player where people are really going to, you know, design their game plan and their defenses towards you, that can have an effect on you. I think one thing that we really talked about this past season with her and knowing the offseason was getting stronger, and so that she can endure some of that and play at another level. And she really embraced that and hit the weight room hard this summer. And I think you're going to be able to see that in her game.
All right, Coach, one thing that I noticed last season is that the team did not get swept in Sun Belt weekend plays, which means every weekend, in case even on the road, those four road trips of two games each, you won at least one game. Sometimes you won both, but not once did you get swept. And I think that is a very big accomplishment for you, for the program, at least heading into this first season. How were you able to keep focus on those road trips so you were able to get at least one victory out of that? Because that's very tough to do.
Yeah, no question. How we have the Sun Belt set up as far as playing games that Thursday and Saturday is definitely a tough challenge for any team. What we try to focus on is the game at hand. And one motto that we always talk about is that you're never as good as you think you are, and you're never as bad as you think you are. So you're always somewhere in the middle. And if you can keep that focus and continue to improve from that level, you'll be okay. And I think that what helped, that's what helped us. So even if we started off on the road trip or the first game with a loss, we knew that we can play better, and we wasn't as bad as we actually played that game. So it always gave us hope that we could come back and get that second victory.
Speaking with Gene Hill, head coach of the Georgia State women's basketball team, and the last three guys to do a podcast, I'm John Morgel, Daniel Bolton, Leon Brown. Daniel, do you have anything for Coach Hill?
Yeah, Coach, how you doing, man? I'm doing great, Daniel. How are you?
I'm doing well. Looking at the Falcons, so that you know how that goes.
We'll talk about it. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. So looking at your schedule, I think you have a very favorable non-conference schedule, if you ask me. Really, your big time test will probably be the UTEP Thanksgiving Classic when you take on, which is hosted by UTEP. How does that really affect you guys as far as traveling on the road and the distance of the road? How would that affect your team this year?
Well, you know, Daniel, I would probably have to disagree with you there. You know, if you look at Toledo, who we open up the season with, they are traditionally one of the top mid-major programs in the country. I mean, they've done a great job in finishing in that top 3-4 and a lot of times winning the MAC. So that's going to be a challenging game to even start it off. And then even if you look,
but the good news about that is that's a home game.
That definitely is a good thing there. But you got to keep in mind also we have 10 newcomers, so I don't know if they realize we're at home. You know,
that's right. So they're just ready to play.
Yes, Coach. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Well, you know, I just think, you know, that'll be a challenging game for us, one that we can really, you know, test ourselves jump in the fire there. And then even if you move on and you talk about, Furman, they was one game in it, and I watched that game. It wasn't even one game. They was about 2 minutes away from being an NCAA team. They played Mercer in the Southern Conference Championship. And that game came down to the wire there and stuff, you know, and they have most of those players coming back. We play them there and also go up to UNCG, who has a veteran group coming back. So I feel like we try to do a great job in balancing the schedule with some mid-majors who kind of been where we want to get and some teams who are still on that road of going there also as we are. But then you throw in, Georgia Tech, who's a BCS ACC opponent, and that always is a tough challenge for you to play on the road there. And then we have Maryland coming here. That'll be a great challenge for us there. Again, an NCAA team, a program that's won the national championship. So I think we'll be tested. You know, what we try to do with our schedule is we want to build everything that we're doing to prepare us for the conference season, so that at the end of the season, we're prepared to win 3 games, put ourselves in a situation where we could be in that top 4, hopefully, and have to win 3 games to make the NCAA.
Yeah,
and not only that, Coach, I think it's good, too, because the committee can look at you at the end of the season, possibly, if it has to come to that particular thing.
Yeah, no question about it. You want to always make sure you give yourself a chance where if someone has to look at you on paper, that they can see that you accepted the challenge to play other people and versus just trying to schedule to get as many wins as possible.
And, Coach, you mentioned that Maryland game. They're going to be probably ranked in the preseason polls that are coming out probably in the next 2 weeks or so. This is a team that hosted its own NCAA sub-regional before they lost to UCLA. I think it's incredible and amazing that you actually got the Terps to come to the sports arena. And if I remember right, without the promise of a return game. How did that transpire? How did Maryland agree to come here?
Yeah, I don't know.
if I caught them on a night that they was drinking or a night I was drinking, you know. But, but you know, that's you're right. We don't have to return. But, you know, one of the good things about being in Atlanta, there's so many recruits here, and everyone is here trying to, you know, position themselves where they can get recruits out of Georgia. So people want to come here, you know. So when you have those teams who don't have a regular scheduled game here, they want to try to figure out how they can get here so that that can help them in their recruiting process. And with Maryland, you know, a few years back switching to the Big Ten, they don't have a regular scheduled game here where they can count on. So that played a big part into it. And we're going to definitely, you know, we're going to use that to our advantage. When teams are looking to get here to Atlanta, we understand that, and we want to give them an opportunity to do that. And we're willing to play them and help our RPI on at the same time.
Leon, I believe you have a question.
Hey, Coach, it's Leon. You know,
hey, Leon.
All right. I understand you're no stranger to, you know, to the collegiate level. But you have seven freshmen, six true freshmen, one redshirt on your team. Mm-hmm. How do you what's the process of amalgamating them to this level of competition?
You know, it's a day-to-day process. You know, one thing you try to get them to understand is how, you know, they have to pick up their tempo and how they have to pick up their intensity level each and every day. So we constantly talk to them about that. But at the same time, we have to also know as coaches that they are freshmen and it's going to be a roller coaster. So we kind of, we're preparing for that this season. You know, our thing is that we have to stay connected. You know, we feel like we have the right pieces. Now it's a matter of time of putting people in the right place and on the bus and just getting in the right situation. And so if we can keep everyone together and keep everyone healthy, it's no doubt in my mind that this is a team that's going to be pretty talented and do some special things in years to come. But you hit it on the nail. I mean, it's a process when you have that many freshmen in your first year and in their first year. And a lot of those freshmen, because of the numbers, they're going to have an opportunity to play, you know, just because, you know. So they have to embrace that and go out and take advantage of it and prove that they earn that, because as time goes forth and stuff, more people will come in the program and they have to continue to try to take advantage of this opportunity to fill their spot.
And, Coach, if there's one weakness or potential weakness I see, it's is the departure of Walnetta Wright and trying to make up for her production in the middle, especially in the rebounding edge. And I'm looking at your roster right now, Coach, and I'm seeing that your tallest freshman right now, well, I'm looking at a couple of players who might be able to replenish that. Again, Shaquana Miller-McCray, 6'3", more of a shot blocker, trying to get more of that. Allison will have to be a part of that as well. And it's like I said, where do you see the middle rebounding coming from?
Well, you know, you started off right with Shaq. I mean, Shaq has to really step up, and that's something that we didn't just talk about once Walnetta left. You know, there's the conversations that we had with Shaq all ongoing last year, in that, you know, hey, you have to continue to improve and develop, because next year we really are going to be relying on you heavily. And she did a lot of good things this offseason to try to prepare for this opportunity. And so she's going to be a big part of that. Obviously, Allison has to step up her game a lot more. And then I'll tell you also, you know, the thing that we could repeatedly say in practice, our guards have to get involved. You know, they can't just sit back and watch from the perimeter and tell post players to go rebound. They have to make a effort to get in there and mix it up and get us three or four rebounds apiece a game. And if we could do it as a unit, a collective group, we can make up that difference from the loss of Walnetta.
And Leon hit upon the six true freshmen, one redshirt freshman. You also have a couple of transfers coming in as well, and I'm really not sure on their playing status as of yet. But there are a couple freshmen that I'm really interested in, and course, one is Moriah Taylor, who was the 5A, 7A, which I believe is Alabama's top classification, their player of the year, a 5'4 guard. What does she bring to the to your squad, and how is her introduction to college basketball going so far?
Well, she can shoot it. I mean, she's a kid that when she steps on the floor, she's in her range to shoot it. I mean, and she has that type of confidence. Now we have to get her to do some of those other things, you know, be able to defend a little bit, you know, be able to help in the rebounding and just have that confidence and know how to play and get your shot off when people are game planning against you. So that's one thing that we've been working on with her. But she's definitely a kid who's going to have a bright future in this program. But we have a number of talented freshmen. I mean, if you stay in the Alabama area, you talk about Taylor Henderson from the Birmingham that area. That's a kid who's a 5'11", 6-foot point guard. And she probably has a better mid-range game than anyone I've seen. You know, she can really create for herself and create for her teammates and get to that that second level and pull up or get to the rim. So she's going to also have a great career here. But again, we got to get her stronger. We got to get her to understand how to do the little things also. But we're very excited about the freshman group. Joelle Johnson. I could go on and on about each one of them. Joelle Johnson, I'm a Louisville.
I was about to bring up Joelle out of Male High School in Louisville.
Yeah, she's another one. You know, she's played in some big games, and she has that type of swagger where she feels really confident in herself. Now she has to be able to do it at this level and stuff. She's really worked hard to get in the condition that shape that's necessary to play at this level. But that's someone else. You know, we're going to play her at different positions this year just because of numbers. We're excited about the class. I mean, they're very, very talented. But, you know, the one thing I always say, they're freshmen. Right. And it's tough to win with freshmen at this level. You know, obviously we're not going to come out and wave the white flag and just surrender. But we also have to know what we're dealing with, and we're going to come out and prepare and fight hard each and every day.
Well, who was it? John Wooden who said that the best thing about freshmen is they eventually become sophomores. Was that who his famous line?
He said it. No question.
Coach, this is your second season going into the Sun Belt. What was your impressions overall in the first, and have you changed your coaching style at all heading into this second season?
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you, John. You know, coming in, I didn't realize the conference was as competitive from top to bottom. I realized that, you know, you had the Little Rock and then the Troy State who had done well and everything, and also all of them. But I didn't realize from the bottom also up that it would be so challenging and stuff. So I think that's the one thing that's really exciting about this league is that, you know, we have, 10 teams that are really, really good, and they're continuing to get better each and every year. Great coaches are in the league. So you got to come out and you prepare. You got to make sure that your players are ready to play every day and know that there's not any day that they can't be beaten if they don't come out ready to play.
Leon, I believe you have something else.
Yeah, Coach. I know it's one thing that if we don't know anything about you, we know that you have an eye for spotting talent and mentoring, you know, players for the next level, and that's the pros. Is there, like, do you, like, how much of that do you plan on incorporating that while at GSU? Because we know about you know, mentoring the Micah Spencers, the Dominic Wilsons while you're at Georgia Tech, you know, or when you're with the Alex Montgomerys and Sasha Goodletts. You know,
I'm sorry, Leah. I couldn't hear it. Repeat that again. I want to make sure I'm answering.
As far as you having an eye for, you know, spotting talent and mentoring talent.
Right.
And as far as, you know, the mentoring of the Alex Montgomerys and Sasha Goodletts while at Georgia Tech, or the Micah Spencers and the Dominic Wilsons while you're at NC State. Mm-hmm. You know, how much of that do you plan on incorporating while you're at GSU, especially all these freshmen?
Yeah, that's a big part. I mean, Dominique and Maya, those kids have come by and they've watched practice and they've talked to the players.
Obviously, that helps you. You know, that gives you some credibility. You know, I was on texting with Kiera Leslie as they won the WNBA championship the other night. And so those are things that gives you credibility when you tell your recruits and your players, hey, look, I've been here before. I've helped players get to that next level, so I know what it's like. So definitely it's going to be a part of what we do. But it's also a part of who I am. I mean, those are kids that, you know, they played a big role of me being here. And I like to think that I played a big part of them being where they're at. So definitely, you know, we're going to share that at Georgia State. And hopefully we're going to get players from Georgia State to be in those situations also, where they can come back and give and talk about how they grew and took the process of development to get to that next level. And I do think we have a couple of kids in our freshman class and some of the transfer who has that capability, but it's about that mentality, willing to do all the little things and willing to work and the investment to get there.
All right. Daniel, do you have anything further?
No, I'm good. You guys have asked all the questions, and Gene has done a great job answering them.
All right. Well, we're speaking with Coach Gene Hill of the Georgia State women's basketball team prior to their exhibition opener in a couple weeks. I believe it's 2 weeks from tomorrow, I think, against Tuskegee before their season opener the following Tuesday against the Rockets of Toledo. And, Coach, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll be sure to check in with you through the course of this upcoming season. Best of luck to you and your Panthers. Oh, actually, you know what, Coach? Before you go, one quick question. You just touched on this very, very, very obliquely, and I want to get into it before you leave. It's the nature of the Sun Belt Conference Tournament, which is the weirdest thing I've ever seen. The top two seeds go to New Orleans, express route, express trip. The 3 through 10 seeds are divvied into two 4-team classifications played at the 3 and at the 4 seed. Now, I know why they're doing it. They want to make very sure that the best team in the Sun Belt, that one seed, gets that NCAA berth. They're trying to cut down some travel costs. But, boy, you have to be that 3 and 4 seed. At least, if you don't make 1 and 2, you got to be 3 and 4.
Well, you know, obviously it does put a big emphasis on finishing that top 4. But I will also say this, John. You know, I'm not at liberty to say some of the things that we're changing in the next year or two. But I think some of those decisions were made when we thought that the team maybe only had one deserving team for NCAA play. Right. As I mentioned, our league, the RPI jumped tremendously this year. Mm-hmm. We have a bright future with great players in the league and great coaches. So we feel like we have teams now. We have two or three teams that may have potential to play in the NCAA tournament. So we're going to do some things that I think you'll hear in the next few months or maybe early in 20, some changes that we're making to kind of show that we feel like, hey, if we make some changes, we can maybe get two or three teams in the tournament. And this is a commitment that we're making that we're going to stick by for 4 or 5 years and say, hey, we think this is the best thing for the future of the league to grow this league. But, I think some of those things that you mentioned right now was done with the intention of, what, as you said, to protect that number one seed, which right. is definitely important. And you know, when you want the regular season title, it's kind of heartbreaking when, you know, you lose one game in New Orleans and now your whole season is over and stuff. So I understand both sides of it, but I think the good thing now is that the league is growing and it's getting better and better, and I think we can make a case that, hey, we may have two teams and maybe even three teams that can make the NCAA and give a good showing.
Right, Coach. And 7 teams from the Sun Belt made it to postseason play last year, 1 in the NCAA, 3 in the WNIT, and 3 including Georgia State in the WBI. Actually, Appalachian State won the whole thing on the WBI right. last year. So that is the ultimate goal, get more than one team in that tournament. All right, Coach, we're going to have to leave it there. I appreciate, again, you joining us, and we'll be sure to check in with you throughout the season. Best of luck to you in your non-conference campaign and in the Sun Belt.
All right. Always great talking with you guys. Again, I appreciate just what you do for sports and in particular women's basketball, just continuing to spread and just get us more exposure. And I really appreciate it.
All right, hey, thanks, Coach.
No problem, Coach. Thank you. All right,
thank you. You guys take care.
All right, bye. That was Head Coach Gene Hill joining us here on the Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. John Morgo, Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton. Appreciate the coach joining us again. A lot of promise in that Georgia State squad. They did surprise everyone and got that fourth seed. I personally had Coach Hill voted in as Coach of the Year because the Panthers were voted in, I think, a preseason selection as 10, and they jumped all the way up to 4. And if it wasn't for a running shot at the buzzer by Matty Story in the tournament, they would have advanced at least to that semifinal round and probably would have moved up from the WBI into the WNIT last season. So I do think there's a big core in there, a good core. Jada Lewis has to play more consistent throughout the year. When teams take her away, she's got to find some other way to be in control, to get on the score sheet. And Allison Johnson might be that prime threat. Again, the one thing that we're going to look at is where are the rebounds going to come from. Allison Johnson is 6 foot. She's a very athletic 6 foot, but they're going to miss that inside presence of Walnetta Wright. Shaq Miller-McCray, more of a shot blocker, and I just want to see the rebounding part of her game develop so she can become almost like a China Ellis was for South Alabama. All right, we're going to leave women's basketball behind because we got a lot to talk about in terms of football. Leon and I were up in Waleska to do the Reinhardt victory last night over Bluefield, 45-14. The Eagles are definitely rolling in the Mid-South Conference, but you look at what else is going on in football in the state of Georgia. Georgia goes down in double overtime. Rodrigo Blankenship misses a field goal. That allows the Gamecocks to advance. Leon and I were listening to the game on our way up to Waleska. Leon said this to me as we got out of the car when we got there. He said, Jake Fromm has to make the good throws.
Absolutely. You know, it's especially for someone like Jake who has next-level aspirations. And I believe Jake is a junior.
I think he is a junior, yes.
He's a junior. Daniel, is Jake a junior?
Yes, he is. He's a junior.
Exactly. Yeah. So, therefore, in order for Jake to really, you know, be a comfortable lock for the next level and for teams to have more confidence in him, you know, every time that Jake throws the ball more than 30 times, Georgia loses.
Right. A lot of that is Georgia's offense is set up to get the lead and then run and keep the lead. When Jake's throwing more than 30 times, it means the Bulldogs are behind, and he's got to throw to try and catch him back up. And if the defenders are keying on his receivers, and that's what's forcing a lot of his incompletions.
Yeah, and that's, you know, it's pressure. And, you know, we have an acronym called the NFLPA. Well, NFL means National Football League Pressure Association.
Right.
When you're in the NFL, you're under pressure. I'm talking about if you're coming up as a rookie, you're under pressure to get some type of starting position. Your job is always under – I mean, it's just one big pressure point, you know. And unfortunately, what we're seeing out of Jake is that when he's under pressure, when that team is behind, he has a tendency to pack it in.
Mm-hmm. He has a tendency to force the throws, try to drill it in.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, I'm a Nebraska fan, but, you know, as long as I'm in Georgia, you know, I like my friendships and associations, so I don't want to talk too bad about all my friends' good teams and everything like that.
Yes.
You know, but that's one thing that we have to see out of Jake Fromm, you know, especially, you know, there's a lot of big – it's like every game going forward is a big game. Georgia, you know, the season's not lost. I don't want to become a prisoner of the moment. I'm not going to go off and put Georgia under the dilapidated and petrified list. You know, stuff happens. You know, this is football. I'm pretty sure Georgia would not be the first team that's in the top 10 to fall this year. I'm pretty sure it will happen maybe two or three more times this year, and Georgia will have a chance to redeem themselves.
Especially since LSU defeated Florida last night. So the East is still up for grabs. Florida had a great chance to take the East by the horns. They lost it. Now, if anything, Missouri is in the driver's seat, but they still have to play the crux of their schedule. I think they still have to play Georgia and Florida. So if it's going to be the East is going to be a dogfight. I mean, the West, Alabama and LSU, that game is looming large once again. But again, Georgia Tech lost big this time to Duke. But there are some good points if you know where to find it. Georgia State defeated Coastal Carolina. Their offense is clicking. The defense, I think, still needs a little bit of work. And the Panthers, they're now 4-2. They're 2-1 in the Sun Belt. They only need two more wins to be bowl eligible. Again, Reinhardt now 5-2. They're 2-0 in the Mid-South Appalachian Division alongside St. Andrews, and they'll play St. Andrews in 2 weeks. And Kennesaw State looks like nobody in the Big South can keep up with them.
Nobody in the Big South can hold a candle to them. I mean, we're talking about Kennesaw State, who has a historic rush of the chapter about the minute. I mean, they're like Reinhardt on steroids.
Yes.
No pun intended.
Yes. Exactly. So, I mean, while the big boys in Georgia college football not doing it, it's the little guys. And I don't know, you don't want to call Georgia State little. They're the largest university in the state, but they are in the group of five below the Power Five. I mean, Atlanta wants Georgia to do well, but here comes Georgia State, 4-0. They 4-2. They play Army this week, 2-1. And, you know, they look to be on the pole to get into that Sun Belt Conference Championship to be played in New Orleans at the end of November and December.
Right. I got to say another something else about, you know, about the biggest guy in Georgia, which is the Falcons.
Mm-hmm.
Daniel.
Yeah.
Now, I'm a Charger fan, so I'm no one to talk. But I'm not going to lie to you. I would definitely, based on what I just seen just now, I'm talking about just now.
Yeah, I know the missed extra point.
I'm talking about his stuff will be packed. They better win this game.
Well, we've already
after he did something like that. I mean, I don't want to say we'll become prisoner moment and everything like that. I'm pretty sure Mr. Matt Bryant has.
Let me say something here. Losing is contagious, and it spreads like wildfire, right?
Mm-hmm.
And even some of your best players are connected to it. And listen, Matt Bryant has been nothing but sensational for us all year long, but in that particular moment, he had one damn job, and that was to kick the extra point. And Matt Ryan did everything he could to put this offense and put this team in a position to win. I think he only had about 5 or 6 incompletions the whole game. Mind you, he was against a terrible Arizona defense.
Right.
The East defense, I think, that is ranked 29th or 30th in the league. And, yeah, our defense ain't good neither. I think ours is historically bad. But that's what you have to do. That's what both teams have to do. They have to make sure they can put up points. They have to make sure they outscore the other team because they know their defense can't stop anybody. And when you're put in a position like we were put in, just to tie the game, and we have no timeouts left. Like, there's nothing we can do right now but to stop on 3rd and 5. I'm looking at this now. And Matt Bryant, and I'm looking at him on the sidelines, and he just, and with veterans, even with veterans who know that they have that job to do, it becomes tough on them. Mm-hmm. And it was really tough on him just now. That was really tough on him, for him to miss that extra point. And you can look at him and you can tell he looks dejected. And, I mean, that's just what it is, man. It is what it is. It is what it is. We're 1-5.
Right.
We're 1-5. And Dan Quinn might not have a job come Monday morning. I mean, let's just call a state.
I think we
had to win this game. Uh-huh.
I think we are getting to the point where Black Monday is becoming irrelevant. Washington fired Jay Gruden last Monday, and they turned around and beat the Dolphins by a point, which is no great shakes. Miami is
Somebody had to win that game.
Exactly.
Yeah, somebody had to win that game.
It's like right? the battle of the defeated.
Right, and give the Jets credit; they got a victory going over the Cowboys to try and get off the schneid. We don't know.
You know, I'm gonna say something about these games today and about some of these teams. Dallas showed up a little late to the party, and I think that they underestimated what the Jets had to offer. Sam Darnold coming back, I think just put that team on a whole nother level. I'm not saying that they're going to be a good team, but they were amped up and they were fired up for this game when Darnold came back.
Right.
You can just look at them and tell that they were ready to play some football and that they had confidence into beating this Dallas team. Out in L.A., folks, if this game doesn't tell you that the 49ers are for real, the 49ers are for real. They held this Rams team to under 200 yards in total offense. This team is for real. I think San Francisco can make some noise here. They don't have a good schedule, but that's because they've been bad the last two or three years. They're not going to have a strong schedule.
Right.
But with that defense and that running game that they have, they're second in the league in rushing. With that running game and the defense that they have and Kyle Shanahan doing what he does, the 49ers could actually make some noise. They look like they're in position to win in the division.
Yeah. Well, they'll have to beat the Rams again, more than likely.
Yeah, and the Seahawks right now are 5-1.
Yeah, that's right. But the NFC West is going to be very, very competitive this year.
The NFC West just may put – I mean, we're talking – the NFC West and the NFC North. What division is the – we have the Bears, the Vikings.
That's the NFC North.
That's NFC North.
Packers and Lions.
Right.
Yeah.
We're talking about some real good teams. We're talking about two divisions that can very well – it's to the point where a team in the NFC right now can go 11-5 and possibly miss the playoffs. That's how good the NFC is looking right now.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I'll look like
– right.
Those divisions right now can put out three – potential playoff teams. You know, you have the Vikings. I know last night off the record, when Daniel and I were talking, I was just going in on the Vikings and Kirk Cousins' lack of production and how he's being overpaid. This man just put up 38 points against a potential playoff contender in the Eagles today. So I'm forced to, for the moment, eat those words. I mean, they almost hung 40 points in the Eagles today, who are looking not quite themselves, but, you know, their whole division is looking a little raggedy right now. So I don't think that loss kind of, like, hurt them too much. But the way the NFC is looking is just – it's a very strong showing right now. Then even the underbelly of the NFC with the Cardinals just now, you know, they're looking like they might pull something off, unfortunately. And, you know, back to the Falcons, for me, with the Falcons – the locker room has to be divided because the offense is consistently the offense is consistently putting up 30 plus points. What else do you need out of your offense? Your offense puts up 30 plus points a game. Last game they put up 30 plus points. The defense couldn't hold water. This game,
but the thing is, they're losing in so many different ways that it's ridiculous. I mean, they're losing in every possible way you can. And I think that's what the frustration is with this team. But go ahead, though.
Yeah, you know, like even with today, you know, you have Julio Jones. For those of us who are here playing fantasy, you started him against the Cardinals, and he put up over 100 yards, 6 catches. You know, the offense is doing their job. You know what I'm saying? Like if I'm a head coach, all I need my offense to do. I mean, winning the game is always preferable, but you have to do your part in order to win the game. And if putting up 30-plus points a game is what's necessary in most cases to win a game, that's all I need for them to do. But then I don't need my defense giving up 30-plus points a game either. That just made – now I got to we're shooting it out every single game. But yet and still we're coming up short. Doesn't make sense. And now you have, you know, even someone like Matt Bryant. All right, we could throw Matt Bryant. I mean, I don't think it was a big now.
And remember, he retired. He came back because the Falcons didn't have anyone else. No one else they brought in could do the job, so they had to show him his money.
Right. So you got Matt Bryant who was put under pressure to kick an extra point when the offense have already put up 30 plus points already as it is.
Right, and he shouldn't have to. Right, he shouldn't have to. He shouldn't have to be under that immense pressure. Now, I'm not saying that he that we give him a pass on this because, yeah, you have to hit that extra point.
You
got to make that extra point because it's right smack dab in the middle. But his team did not allow him. His team put him in that position. The defense has really been to blame this whole year.
Right.
I mean, there's been nothing good about this Falcons defense this year. Nothing. Mm-hmm. The one exception is Grady Jarrett. And I say this all the time. Grady Jarrett is one of those guys that I would pick him up any day of the week, any day of the year. It doesn't matter what day it is because I know he's going to give it to me. He's going to give me 100% on every play and on every down. Even though he might not make the play, but he's going to give me 100% every play. I can't say that about the rest of those guys.
Right. Right. So, yeah, Grady Jarrett's doing a great job for the Falcons. But, you know, Desmond Trufant just keeps getting beat up. That's what I'm looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people are just, I mean, and even the Falcons did make some wholesale substitutions in that defense, in the secondary. I mean, Robert Alford's gone. At least I thought he was.
He's actually with Arizona, he's been out for a while.
And you said, you know, should they get rid of Quinn? Well, Dan Quinn was supposed to take over the defense. So isn't this ultimately at the end of the day put at his feet?
This is why he has to go, because remember we said this at the beginning of the year when he did make himself the defensive coordinator, that he put himself on the hot seat by doing it. And I think he knew what he was doing. Mm-hmm. He said, listen, if I can't put out the proper defense, then I don't need to be the head coach either. You know, and I think the kind of message that he was sending to his team and that he was sending to Falcons fans, if I can't do this, I'm a defensive genius. My defense, the defensive scheme that I was able to put out there on the field, I won a Super Bowl with.
Right.
I won a Super Bowl with the year before I came to you guys. So I should be able to run this defense. But what he didn't understand is that, listen, coaching and running the defense at the same time, that's two jobs. That's two jobs in one. I mean, because as a head coach, you still have to manage the game. And as the defensive coordinator, yes, you still have that job to focus on the defense. But you still, on the overall scheme, have to manage the overall game. You're the guy. You're the man. You have to do that. And right now at 1-5, it doesn't look like he's doing a great job of doing it.
Yeah.
And again, they'll be hosting the Rams next week here at Mercedes-Benz, so that doesn't look like...
An angry Rams team, by the way, guys. Who might be going to 3-3. They've lost 3 in a row.
Who took it on the chin today, too, by the way. But speaking of taking it on the chin, we have a team that went to the playoffs last year. That's, you know, though they went to the playoffs in AFC South. I'm talking about the Tennessee Titans. Everybody, they don't have an identity. And today, you have their starting quarterback. You know, he has so much promise. We're talking about Marcus Mariota. Was benched in exchange for the 17th quarterback that the Miami Dolphins had with Mike Tannehill, who's now a backup for the Tennessee Titans, was inserted. And the Broncos have embarrassed another team that went to the playoffs last year. Mm-hmm. The Broncos defense is shutting the Titans out currently.
And now the Broncos have the Chiefs on Thursday night.
Wow! So these guys look like they somehow. I mean that little win they got against the Chargers gave them a little bit. It was like a shot of adrenaline.
Right.
You know, so. Are we looking at – have we seen – I don't want to jump to conclusions and become a prisoner moment. Is Marcus Mariota taking a – you know, his former draft mate, Jameis Winston-like break where you just put him on the bench for a little while, let him get the flow, try to get him – you know, let him recharge on the pine?
And I'll put one more with you, Cam Newton.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. The Panthers did win overseas.
Right.
You know – I don't see the Panthers moving past Cam. Yeah, I think they're going to let him heal.
I do.
You think so?
I do. Yeah, I do. You just cannot. This team is hot right now, and there is something that is that they see in this Kyle Allen kid, right? He's 5-0 as a starter. He was winning games. Check this stat out.
What?
Last year, when they had Cam Newton and Tyler Hickey in, I think that was his name, when they had him in there,
he went to Collins Hill.
They went 0-9. Yes, he did. He did. He sure did. He went to Collins Hill High School down here.
Right.
They went 0-9. They didn't win a game with those two in as starting quarterbacks last year, and that was the end of the year. So they ended the year on a 9-game losing streak. And they ended the year, I think, on like a 7 or 8-game losing streak. But with those two in as starting quarterbacks, they went 0-9. This year, Kyle Allen is 4-0 as the starter. They were 0-2, and everybody was like, oh my God, this is about to go downhill. But this kid comes in here, and he just brings a different dynamic into this football team.
Yes.
This football team now has life, and now they look like they can challenge the Saints for the division. After that win over there today, they looked so impressive today. And Kyle Allen, I'll take kudos to him and kudos to Ron Rivera for, you know, sticking with him. Because they still have another young quarterback on the bench whose name is Will Greer. But Kyle Allen just brings a whole different dynamic to that football team. And I'm impressed with him. I am. The team that impressed me today the most, though, was the Houston Texans.
Oh, yes, that went over to the
That was a big win for them. They were down 17-7, I think, at one point, and just came back and blitzed the Chiefs. Houston now lost 2 in a row.
Yeah, there's a lot. And Pat Mahomes threw his first INT today. I mean, it's just one pick
right.
for the whole season, but I'm just saying, this is his first pick for the whole season, I mean, in a loss. And there's never a good time to throw a pick, especially in the end zone.
Right.
So, do you think that the blueprint has been laid out and potential vulnerabilities? Because, you know, the Chiefs never really known for having a top-tier defense, but the offense have always been so overpowering. You know, are we seeing holes in that?
Well, Deshaun Watson has put two great games together, and I think he is moving to the forefront of NFL quarterbacks.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that, Don. He is just a phenomenal player. I will say this, though, one more thing about the Chiefs. The Chiefs' defense is suspect.
Uh-huh.
We do kind of know this. Today they gave up 31 points. But last week against Indianapolis, I mean, there's so many different ways you can beat them. Indy, you can kind of argue that they had the blueprint for it, and that's running the football, don't turn the ball over. They had the ball. They won that game on time possession. Like, Kansas City never got on the field.
Right.
Mahomes never really got to see the field like that. So if you can beat them that way, then that's fine. Today, I think that they got a lot of pressure on Mahomes and made him a little uncomfortable. And nobody had really done that to him all season long.
It's a lot to unpack this week.
Yes, it is.
Because we have another situation going on in the Midwest where, as expected, unfortunately as expected.
Well, come on. We knew this.
But the Cleveland Browns dropped today. They're now 2-4. They're 2-4. With the Patriots on the horizon.
Well, they don't get them next week. Patriots are Monday night with the
Jets.
So I guess it would be the Browns and the Patriots off that bye.
Right.
But they're still in second in the AFC North, two games behind the Ravens, only because Pittsburgh's got one win, depending on what happens tonight against your Chargers.
And this is going. I'm going. I'm going to unpack that next.
And the Bengals are being the Bungles.
They're being the Bengals from the 90s. Yep.
Right. So we still got Miami winless. The Jets look like they're going to get off the winless tonight. So we're going to have two winless teams when we're done today. I think those would be the only two winless teams in the league.
Yeah, but we're looking at – and I've seen, you know, first of all, when watching the Seahawks and the Browns today, you have the wide receiving core of the Seahawks, after scoring a touchdown, put on a whole in-sync-like routine for the celebration. I mean, are these celebrations getting out of control now? I mean, first every time a defense makes a play on off, every time the defense does a takeaway, you got the whole photo op, you know, looking like the Cleveland Cavaliers of 2009.
Right.
You know, I kind of like it. I mean, I remember, I think we were talking about this X amount of years ago when one of the Saints wide receivers, I think Daniel brought this up, it was about 5 years ago.
Oh, was it Joe Jones?
No, it was what? No,
Joe Horn. It was Joe Horn.
Was it Joe Horn?
With the cell phone in the
Joe Horn.
Worse than that.
The cell phone in the cell phone. Yeah.
Worse than that. That was a good one. I'm talking about when the gentleman went off and started whipping the nay-nay.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you would have brought that to my attention that X amount of years ago. I mean, it's getting – I mean, I like it. It brings a little more flavor to the game.
Right.
You know, the creativity. But when I've seen them break out the NSYNC, they had the whole neck motion left, right. I mean, it was interesting. You know, and at least I was like, when I seen, I was like, they better win this game. I know that for a fact. And lo and behold, they won the game. Odell Beckham, you know, he had 6 receptions for 106 yards, though. He kind of went out there and did his job. He got his numbers. But unfortunately, you know, Baker Mayfield, you know, was just out here just throwing those picks like darts. And all of them weren't his fault. You know, some of the, you know, he was going for wide receiver Galloway, which is, you know, it kind of went through his hands a couple times. But, man. He's having a tough the Browns are having a tough stretch, but you know, and I'm, you know, all likelihood I believe that they will lose to the Patriots. I mean, I'm not the type of person that's going to like bet against the Patriots in the regular season.
No, you don't do that.
Yeah, just not a wise investment. So that's going to put the Browns at 2-5, after which their second half of the season will, based on where they're at and the type of roster they have, will be pretty favorable. They may finish the season still 10-6 potentially.
And Mark, and circle December 22nd on your calendars. That is Cincinnati at Miami, and that could be the first game where we'll see two 0-14 teams going at it. That'll be down at the Hard Rock Stadium. So,
called the Toilet Bowl,
the Hard Luck Stadium. Yeah. Yep, that will be your Toilet Bowl game. So.
You know,
that's gonna be a stinking game.
Yeah, it is gonna be a stinker. It is.
Oh my goodness!
And we have stigmata just occurred. I mean, that's the only thing that's next right now. So if you're the Dallas Cowboys, what do you do? If you're Dak, are you kicking yourself for not taking that, for not getting your money? Is Dak still going to get his money at the end of the season? I mean, I know. Let's not become prisoners of the moment. I don't want to put Dallas in the dilapidated and petrified section yet because the Eagles did lose at the same time and their division's looking pretty raggedy.
Yep. Someone's got to win that division. They're both 3-3, and hey, look at the Giants. They're 2-4. They're a game behind.
Yeah, and the Giants have. It's interesting because if I'm making out the power rankings, do you put the Giants ahead of the Cowboys, even though the Giants don't have a better record? Keep it real, John. Keep it real, Daniel.
I don't know.
Uh oh.
I would have to put the Cowboys first.
You have to put the Cowboys first.
Yep. Again, Giants played the Patriots last week on a Thursday. Now they'll get Giants will be hosting the Cardinals this week. And, oh, boy, Sunday night football, Eagles at Cowboys.
Yep, somebody's got to win the game.
That game would probably tell how the division is going to go.
Right.
I think. Even without the second matchup. The second matchup probably not coming down until like week 15. But
probably not.
Towards the end of the year. So I think that that's going to tell – this is going to be the telltale of that one. It's funny because the NFC East is now looking like the winner of that division with the Dallas loss. It's looking like that's going to be a 9-7 or 8-8 divisional winner.
Oh, I didn't want to say that, but you might be right.
I think the NFC East is going to be the same. Going to be the same way.
And the funny part about it is that the NFC West, I mean, if the Rams could ever get it together, the NFC West could have 3 teams in the playoffs. Yeah. So, I mean, that could be a possible case. And of course, that's just Carolina, you know, still playing as well as they're playing. Of course, they could take one of those away from them. But, yeah, the NFC East is looking that way. Mm-hmm. That where there could be a division winner coming out of the Redskins, or not, they're going to be very irrelevant in this. Yeah, they got a win today, but, I mean, who did you beat?
The Dolphins.
So, I mean.
You don't play the Bengals.
Right.
Guys.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think that's what we're going to be headed for.
I don't want to sound all doom and gloom, and I know I've been saying, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be this. I don't want to be that, right?
Right.
You know, especially for things that make such great media. I mean, Baker Mayfield has been nothing but great media, right? Whether he's doing good or doing bad.
And those Progressive commercials, I don't know if you've seen those.
Oh, man. So, this is you said Alpha right now, John, Progressive. Okay, we just seen the benching of Marcus Mariota.
Yes.
All right, I was shocked, you know, with that, because I believe that Marcus Mariota, you know, coming off a playoff berth last year, that he was being progressive. Okay. Now we've seen Mr. Mayfield. You know, he did click off 7 wins last year, though they came against all losing teams. But seven wins for a rookie.
Right.
This man has 7. He has 11 picks in 6 games. At what point in time? Because you know you want to keep your players like you have players on your team like Odell Beckham. All right. If you look up the word diva.
You see Antonio Brown.
You think so? You think he's? I mean, I think they're like 1A and 1B. They're like 1A and 1B.
Well,
I mean,
yeah. Well, Odell's got himself run off one team. Anthony's got himself run off 3 teams. So unless Odell can get himself run off of 4 teams in a calendar year, it's Antonio.
Oh, okay. Yep. Great point.
Yeah, that's true. That is true.
So at what point in time, you know, this is Baker's sophomore season, 11 picks, 6 games. You know, You're staring 2-5 down. I mean, straight down the pipe. At what point in time do you potentially think, okay, this experiment came, it's here, unimpressive, unprogressive? At what point in time do we do that? Do we just write the season off and like, huh?
You don't. We have to understand something, guys. That this is his second year. Right.
He's
entering that sophomore slump. But at the same time, remember, he didn't get the keys to the ride until about what, week 5 or 6 last year, and the momentum shift was going. It was there for him.
And honestly, their coach had to get fired before that to happen.
Exactly.
Jackson had to get kicked out.
They had the Kansas Jackson. It was like last year. Aaron Rodgers didn't have the best year last year before he got hurt.
That's
you know
true.
What I'm saying? He didn't have a great year.
Right.
Like, it just happened, you know? And that's what we have to do. I think what the Cleveland Browns fans, first off, the Cleveland Browns fans shouldn't say a damn thing.
Yeah.
Because they hadn't had a quarterback like this in a long time, okay? They need to chill out, okay? This guy's the future. I like what he can do. It's not time to move on because where else are you going to find a quarterback other than Colin Kaepernick? And you know you're not going to pick him up.
Right.
So, I mean, we'll be fooling here. You know, let's give this guy a chance. Okay? And his defense don't help him out no better neither.
Right.
Remember week 1, that defense gave up 43 points to Tennessee, who was thinking about benching Mariota. Now, Mariota's a different case because Mariota's been in the league now, what, 4 or 5 years?
Yes.
Yeah.
He's a different case. It might be time to switch gears with him.
Right.
And probably go to Tannehill.
And I think they will do that. All right, this is the last 3 guys to do a podcast. John Morgan, Leon Brown, Daniel Bolton. We've come to the end, so it's time for our 3 hosts to say things, get off their chest. Guys, I got a question for you. You're in the... You're in the final game of a series. Would you rather be knocked out by a Mike Tyson uppercut 6 seconds into it, or would you rather lose on points at the end?
I'd rather lose on points at the end. Well, I know where you're going with this.
Well, baseball fans had that similar quandary this on Wednesday night when in the 2 game 5s, the home teams both lost in diametrically opposed ways. The Atlanta Braves pitching didn't show up until the third inning. By that time, the Cardinals had already had a 10-0 lead. And in the Dodgers-Nationals game, the Dodgers took it to extra innings, but Clayton Kershaw, their putative ace, came on in relief and allowed the game-winning hit. So both teams lost in diametrically opposite ways. Braves fans just, and I think everybody would have rather losing at the end than just being thoroughly demoralized at the beginning. And looking over that Braves series, we've had some very interesting pitching choices by manager Brian Snitker, namely Julio Teheran. I thought he was going to start Julio game four. He didn't. And he tried to put in Folty in game five. Folty didn't have it. He put Max Fried, who was very effective, in a way too early in game four. The fact is the Braves probably should have won that. And for the Dodgers, well, Clayton Kershaw, he is their ace, but for some reason in the playoffs, he does not deliver. So maybe the Dodgers need to have him sit down or at least throw him early in the series and then just not use him toward the end. But two baseball teams, two favorites, two teams staying home in two completely heartbreaking and very hard ways.
Don, you know what? It's funny because me and Leon talked about this morning.
Okay.
And it's more of a disappointment versus unforgettable.
Right.
Atlanta's is unforgettable. And the reason why is because they got punched in the mouth before they could even throw a punch.
Right.
They got hit hard before they can even swing at the bat. You come out 10 runs, what do you do about that? I mean, that's demoralizing in the game five.
No right? Home runs. Freddie Freeman had an error on what could have been a double play.
Right.
So,
and versus the disappointment, the Dodgers were the best team in baseball all year long. Mm-hmm. That's the disappointment there. I think it's more of a disappointment to see the Dodgers than anything. But Atlanta does have the more unforgettable kind of meltdown with the 10-1 first.
Exactly. Who wants to go next?
Go ahead, Leon.
I'm going to go off in professional sports. Social change and foreign policy.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. I know where you're going.
Well, we had a situation occur over the past couple of days where you have the general manager for the Houston Rockets?
Daryl, five letters, begins with an M, ends in a Y. I want to say Maury, but I don't think that's right.
I think you're right. I think you might be right, John.
Okay.
Well, either or, Daryl Maury, who went off and expressed, you know, his support for Chinese protesters, you know, just by saying he supported them, China took issue. They seemed to be starting up another, what seemed to be a cold war of advertising by publicly blacking out preseason games within the NBA, which hopefully that doesn't lead to other corporate relationships between the United States and China. And as well as, putting out penalties towards, you know, certain sporting events. And that's something now as there was a big brouhaha last year with LeBron James making statements towards Donald Trump, which led to a very popular news anchor telling LeBron James to shut up and dribble, which led LeBron to enact more, you know, to do more social change. So it's like, as NFL players, you know, is it good for them, or NFL, NBA, professional athletes in general? It's like you want to go off and you want to use your popularity and your finances and your influence to initiate social change. But when doing that, you have to be prepared for the backlash that will follow. And I don't believe that the general manager for Houston Rockets, Daryl Morey, I don't think that he knew that it was going to cause so much of backlash. I thought he figured that he would have made his comment if it flew under the radar. And, you know, that would have been that. Because even domestically, you have Greg Popovich, he's like one of the most – I think he has to be one of the most outspoken coaches that we've seen. And he's always critical of Donald Trump.
Right.
Recently, he said he would prefer Silverman over Donald Trump. So, do we draw the line or do we keep on pushing the envelope? Because we've seen what happened to Colin Kaepernick, as you spoke about this a little earlier, you know, who else – can the Cleveland Browns possibly go to and kind of Kaepernick? We know that's not going to happen, even though it should not be like that.
Right.
You know, you had the Pittsburgh Steelers who need a quarterback for and they're needing Colin Kaepernick, but unfortunately it's not going to happen. At what point in time do we draw the line, or do we just go off and just create larger shades of gray? That's my minute on that one.
Yeah, very, very good points. I wanted to talk about that because Steve Kerr kind of basically Steve Kerr got criticized for not saying anything, and basically he got criticized by the far right because he's, again, as you're saying, a vocal critic of President Trump. And but part of it, I think, is that the teams were in China when this whole thing happened. I think, and that maybe, you know, the whole thing of you don't want to offend your host, that kind of deal. We'll see what happens.
That kind of deal.
We'll see what happens when the Lakers get out of China, whether or not they can get out of China. Remember the misadventures of Alonzo Ball. What was it, last year?
Got caught. No, that wasn't him. That wasn't Lonzo Ball. That was his brother.
Okay,
that was Leandro. That was Leandro.
UCLA.
Yeah. Right. And we needed, and we had an intercession from Mr. Trump to get him out, and then I think he kind of threw a little bit of a tantrum that Mr. Ball wasn't grateful enough or something. I'm not 100% sure that's right. But I do think something along those lines happened. All right, Daniel, you're up.
All right. So, of course, we all have our signature finishes. Of course, I think I have about three of them. I have an essay, and my essay's coming up in about 2 or 3 weeks where I will break down the midseason of the NFL.
Okay.
So hope you guys tune in for that one. And then, of course, I have a buy-in kind of like segment, but this time I have a hashtag salute segment that I would like to do, and it's two ladies who were recently in the news who I have to give a hashtag salute to. The first one is the great Simone Biles. She has become possibly the greatest gymnast of our time. I don't think we can dispute that at all. She may be the greatest gymnast of all time if she keeps doing what she's doing. At the World Championship, she just became the winningest gymnast in World Championship history. She got her 24th and 25th medals, and both of those medals were gold medals. She's won 5 out of 6 golds to be won in Germany for the World Championship. She won it at the team competition and the all-around and in the vault, and also won with the floor exercises and the balance beam, which she just killed it, okay? Simone Biles is just an incredible gymnast, and she's going to sign in next year's Olympics as well. The other one is one Coco Gauff. That is a 15-year-old who just actually took our hearts this year. Of course, she defeated Venus Williams in, I believe it was the Australian Open, if I'm not mistaken. Well, she today defeated Jelena Ostapenko, 6-3-1, 6-6-2, in Austria, to win her first single championship. So congratulations on her in that amazing feat. And I just believe that, especially for golf is going to be something bigger than what she is right now. She's always been an inspiration. I think both of these girls, her and Simone, have been just incredible inspirations for young girls out there to say, hey, listen, you can do whatever you can. Just keep reaching for it and just keep working hard for it. And I just give my salute to these two young ladies.
All right. Thanks a lot, Daniel. And that's going to wrap us up for this edition of The Last Three Guys to Do a Podcast. I want to thank Georgia State women's basketball head coach Gene Hill for joining us, previewing the Panther 2019-20 campaign. And you can catch us on the road on Saturday. We'll be in Valley, Alabama, across the river from Chattahoochee, from Columbus, as we'll work Reinhardt against Point. Down there, we'll be on the air 5:45 p.m. You can catch us on ReinhardtEagles.com. Click through the football link. Looking forward to calling that one. We'll all be there again. Daniel, you missed a good one on Saturday as Reinhardt showed what they're capable of, 47-14 victory over Bluefield. So we'll see you then, and we'll be back with another episode of The Last Three Guys Do a Podcast. Sunday or Monday will probably be when it will be uploaded. And, of course, if you've got a question, hit us up, John_Morgo on Twitter. And you can hit me and Daniel up on Facebook. We'll ask us anything you want. We'll be try to answer to you on the air. Thanks so much for joining us. Tell a friend, tell an enemy. We are the Last Three Guys to a Podcast. We are out. We'll see you on Saturday from Point University. Have a good day, everybody.